Hi, I'm Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Mendoski.
And this is the Start Writing Podcast.
And this week we are doing Blurb Theory Part 2 as promised. But first, Jay has This Week in Critiques or Writing True? I don't remember.
Writing True. So this is a nonfiction book. This is about, I read a book called Ghost in the Wires, and it's about a hacker named Kevin Mitnick. So I'm going to spoil the ending. You can skip forward a few seconds, but I just thought this was a great move. So the whole time Kevin is like hacking into these systems, but he's not a villainous hacker. He's a really good guy. He mostly does it out of curiosity, but the stuff he hacks into gets him in big trouble with like the feds. And so he ends up like having to go undercover, like fake identity, and he's struggling just to make money. Right. Because he can't legitimately use his name anymore. He has to get like these really low paying jobs, and he has access to all these credit card numbers, but he's not a thief and he doesn't steal anybody's money. Right. Even though he's all in this big trouble. And so they make a point of this as they're telling the story throughout. And so, you know that it's a problem that he needs money, but he can't get it because he's a hacker, right? Mm-hmm. Unless he's going to cheat and like give in to the darker side of it. So in the end, this is the spoiler, he does get caught by the feds, but the story goes public, and in the news, he gains somewhat of a celebrity status, and he's able to, like, he has speaking tours, and he ends up becoming a white hat hacker. So he's hacking in order to show people the vulnerabilities in their system. Right. But so this victory at the end is made like it feels good because earlier they pointed out several times where he's struggling to get money. It's like, so you know it's a problem for him the whole time, and it seems like there's no way out.
Right.
And they just like built that up so that when it happens at the end, You just like have this sigh of relief. You're relieved for him, and it's because of the way they pointed to that and like pointed out the problem again and again.
Hmm.
So I just thought that was a really good move. You could have easily told that story without pointing that out earlier,
right?
But they did, and it just made that ending so rewarding. I loved it.
All right, what was the book again?
It's called Ghost in the Wires about Kevin Mitnick. It's now. I've read like 4 books this year. I can already tell that's going to be one of my top books for the
really?
Year. I just loved it. I'm not sure everybody would love it, but I just thought it was so interesting. It's like a James Bond thriller, except it's all true. It's so true. Crazy. I just thought it was great.
So was it nonfiction or was it creative nonfiction?
Well, no, I'd say it's more nonfiction. I don't think like pretty much everything he says in there really happened. Like he's not really playing loose with the details at all.
So creative nonfiction is where it's still true, but you juggle chronological events to create a stronger narrative.
Yeah, I don't think that either.
Okay.
He pretty much tells it straight. I think again was emphasizing the right points.
Right.
And that was kind of my point here. But
yeah. That's kind of interesting. Okay. All right. So if you haven't heard it, we did a full episode on The Turn and the psychology of curiosity. So we're going to cover it really briefly here. But if you're not familiar with these two concepts, I do recommend you check out that episode before going into this one, because everything we're going to talk about in Blurb Theory Part 2 builds on those concepts. So The Turn is generated through two different means, as we talked about before, curiosity gaps and twists. In a blurb, you'll want to mostly stay focused on generating curiosity gaps. So you think of like a puzzle that's almost complete, but it's only missing like 3 pieces. There's like a pull for almost any human. You've got to finish that because it's almost there. And so that's what a curiosity gap is about. Most of it's filled in, but there's just those few missing pieces. To do that, you've got to take a knowledge void and fill in most of that so that there's just a few pieces missing. That's the curiosity gaps, right? Because if you don't know enough, then you're just not interested at all. That's what you're going to try and do in your blurb, is you've got to have enough exposition to create a curiosity gap. But instead of just writing what your story is about, you want to go in thinking specifically, how am I going to generate a curiosity gap about this? Mm. And so roughly, you get two, maybe three sentences to generate a curiosity gap or a turn, and then you need, and then you can move on and do it again in the next session and do it again. But that's kind of, you know, so most really good blurbs that use this method will basically have three short paragraphs, each one ending in its own curiosity gap and revealing more about the story.
Wait, and so would they, if you have a curiosity gap as your last sentence of the first paragraph, right? And right. All of a sudden they're like, whoa, really? What are you going to do with that at the beginning of the next?
Nothing. You're going to talk about different, so maybe you'll talk about a character in the next curiosity gap. And then in the next, so usually it'll be like curiosity gap one, premise. Curiosity gap two, character. Curiosity gap three, you may even use a twist. Saying, and then if this is what you're predicting how the story ends, it doesn't. Mm. Right? And so those become your three points of curiosity. One, you create a knowledge gap and a curiosity gap with the premise. Two, you do it with the character. And then three, you say, this is probably the most likely prediction that people will have based on those two paragraphs. Inform them that it's incorrect.
Mm.
And so that gives you...
good.
So we covered in our first episode on blurb theory, we covered, the big theories on how to do that. So this is the big formula. So this is another formula there is premise, character, twist, right? And each one of those designed specifically to provide enough exposition that you can then leave a gap to drive motivation to fill in that gap. And the only way to fill in that gap is to read the book. So I came up with this example for my premise gap. After the War of the Worlds broadcast sent America into a panic, the scientists who studied the event promised it would never happen again, but they were wrong. So there's the gap. They were wrong. So clearly it's happened again, but it feels like there's more. Right? Why were they wrong? Why does it keep happening? And so it's really easy to see the point where I'm presenting the gap. It starts with but, gap. And so a lot of gaps will often use then, what, when, after, and immediately you kind of say, but there's more to it than just this, right? And so it's just a short line of exposition with that little gap at the end. The next element we want to talk about is styling and tropes. And the reason you want to look at this is because certain types of books style their blurbs different ways, right? Generally, you're going to introduce only a single character in a blurb because it's so short that it's just overwhelming to a reader to follow multiple characters. The exception is the romance genre will introduce both protagonists. The two romantic interests. However, they don't do that if it's a first-person narrative romance, whereas you introduce the single protagonist. And so those are specific stylings of blurbs that are specific to that genre. The other thing is tropes that identify your genre, right? You say dragon, people say fantasy, right? That's just how that works. And so you'll want to identify any tropes that are in your book that you can mention briefly in the blurb to help specify your genre, right? Because as we said before, so the most important thing to know is that the blurb is not about your book. It's about your genre. Same thing with your cover. Your cover is not about your book. It's about your genre. And so... let me talk to you first we'll talk about Jay. Like, we talked about his blurb last time, and he was like, it's terrible. He says, but if you read my book, it's dead on.
Yeah.
And so I had an experience where I had written, after we did blurb theory, I went through and I wrote about 10 blurbs, and I took them to my critique group, and I had them go through. And so it was blurb number 2 was their favorite. And it was an old blurb. It was not one of the new ones I'd written. Oh. I brought all of my blurbs because I wanted feedback on, everything. And that was their favorite blurb. So I put it up on Amazon for about 2 weeks and my sales dropped.
Oh,
and
crap.
So I went back and I looked at it and I was trying to assess why this happened. I wrote these great blurbs. I got feedback and it didn't work. And what I realized was they had not picked the most interesting blurb. They had picked the most accurate blurb because they'd read my book. So they were doing what you had done.
Yeah.
Saying, if you read my book, yeah, this is a very, very accurate description. But it wasn't gripping. It didn't have the curiosity gaps generated in it. It didn't have good copywriting to hold your attention and to make you interested in reading the book. It didn't have those elements. But it was the most accurate description of what the book actually was.
Hmm.
And that's why my sales had dropped. It had lacked the elements of good copyright.
Yeah.
So,
that's so great.
Again, blurb and cover are about your genre. Communicate that, because often people, you know, are looking for a specific book in a specific genre because that's what they enjoy. And if they're branching out to you, they're willing to try a new author. You just need to communicate, I am your genre.
So do you just log into Amazon and go to that category and start reading blurbs of the, like, the top 10 in that?
Yeah.
Like, how do you gain this knowledge?
So, one, you're going to want to read blurbs by other authors, but sometimes they're kind of dull, even bestsellers. And so you really have to, you got to read until you've read about 10 blurbs that you think are good that are top in your thing. Mm. Because traditional publishing approaches the blurb very differently. The blurb is not a major selling point for them.
Mm.
In fact, I know several indie authors who have been brought in as consultants for traditional publishing because they wanted to fix the blurbs, because they said,
really?
You guys are doing it right when it comes to digital sales. Because an indie author sells their book based on a blurb. Traditional publishing does not. You know, people do pick up the jacket and they'll read it and then they'll flip through it. Like, it's one component of many that determines if the book will sell. Whereas for us, your ad was good enough to get a click. Now you got to convert with the blurb. You know, like, it's a big deal when you're doing digital sales.
Well, so is there any way to filter for indies? Or, like, how do you...
And not that I know of. And so that's why I say what you want is about to find... So I don't know how many you'll have to go through, but find 10 blurbs that catch your attention in your genre and see what they're doing.
And then try to mimic that style.
Yeah, try to use that style. Yeah, so...
Cool. And I suppose that's the same with the covers.
Yes. So, so this is not an episode about covers, but I had a interesting experience, and it really much related to blurbs that I wanted to point out. We're saying blurb is about genre. You need to communicate this is what you're looking for, right? Mm-hmm. And so there was this guy who'd put this image up about his cover, and he was getting feedback on it. And he'd mentioned that there was a wolf on it, but he's not writing werewolf supernatural fiction. And I said, get rid of the wolf right now. He's like, but there's a wolf in my story. So it kind of fits. I was like, no, you miscommunicate your genre. You put a wolf on a cover in this day and age, you are either writing White Fang or werewolf supernatural, right? That's the only reason you could put a wolf on a cover in this day and age, because the werewolf supernatural genre is huge, and there's always a wolf on the cover. And immediately that communicates that. So if that's what they're looking for, they buy your book, they're not going to like it, because it's not that. And if they're looking for something else and they see that, they might think that it's werewolf supernatural fiction and it's not what they want.
What did he end up with as the cover?
He didn't change it. He was like, I'm going forward with it. I was like,
okay.
Your decision, dude. But, you know, that my big thing was your book, your cover and your blurb are not about your book. They are about communicating your genre to the reader, because that they're looking for a specific book in a specific genre. And you need to communicate that. But yeah, and so that was just an experience
I had.
So, you know, and you and I have both had the problem of blurb accuracy, an incredibly accurate blurb.
Especially me.
Yes. You know, doesn't convert well. You know, was it Dave Chesson, when we interviewed him on the podcast, when he was talking about blurbs, he says, it's not a book report. Don't write that. Right. And that's, you know, that's a book accuracy type blurb. It's very accurate about what's in the book, but it doesn't sell books.
Yeah.
That's everything I've got. What about you? So is we really just have one formula to add into the formulas we presented before. And I did want to mention, you need to look at the styling within your specific genre. There are too many for us to cover here, but each genre is going to have their own styling, their own blurbs, and you need to read and see what they're doing and what works and what the style elements. Because if you're writing a romance in third person POV and you're not introducing both protagonists, it doesn't look like that's what you've written. Mm. And you're not communicating your genre accurately.
So here's another related thought. So I sell photography, and usually the photo of a given set that I think is the best is not the one that sells the best. So you gain data with people's dollar bills, right? Yeah. They tell you with their dollars
what's
the best. And you have taught me that you can do this with your blurbs. Like, you write up 10 different ones and you can test them.
Yeah.
And just like when you noticed it went down, like, that's just super valuable data that you should plan on getting to once you've got a few of your blurbs worked out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can learn a lot from the dollar bills.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that was another short one. So I feel like it's a month of short episodes this time around. But thanks for listening. Love feedback as always. And you can rate us on iTunes or whatever platform you listen for. That would really help us out. And if you want to support us, check out one of our books.
Thanks, guys.